Welcome to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, a show dedicated to the artistry and science of sports field management and celebrating the groundskeepers who create those masterpieces. The Diamond Da Vinci's podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. Well, we're in the final months of another school year, and many high school graduates are preparing to say goodbye to grade school and hello to the higher learning of college. Today's podcast deals with the health of today's collegiate turf programs, how they attract potential turf students, and what they have to offer students today.
To start things off, we're going to talk about how we decided to become turf professionals, how other people in our lives have gone about those decisions as well, and what we can do to help the young guys who may be interested in doing the same thing.
And in our Out of the Park segment, we'll turn to two successful turf management programs at the University of Tennessee and Penn State. There we'll talk with Dr. John Sorokin and Dr. Andy McNitt about the challenges academic turf programs have in attracting new candidates into their programs and the sports turf profession. We'll have all of that and more on this edition of the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast. And hello again, turf fans, turfies, whatever you want to be called. I'm Paul Zawaska, your host for the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast, and I'm joined by Teresa Beyer, my talented co-host and producer of the show.
Hello, Paul. So lovely to be with you again.
Yes. Well, I got to ask you, T, how is the child rearing coming? Is she on solid food yet? Or walking all over the house? Surely by, you know, in a couple months, she'll be ready to mow the lawn, right?
Oh, hopefully, hopefully. She certainly has the genes for wanting to do that, and that's for darn sure. No, it's going great. She's so far, knock on wood, cross, you know, fingers, all that jazz. So far, she likes to sleep a little bit, which is a nice surprise after her brother. So we're contemplating erecting statues in her honor.
It's amazing how fast kids develop and grow and move on these days. You know, it's so accelerated about how kids learn compared to my childhood back in the 60s and 70s. You know, I was still doing math with my fingers and toes in high school.
I still do that today.
Well, let me ask you this, Teresa. When you exited high school, did you know what you wanted to do as a profession?
Nope.
You didn't?
I wanted to be a mathematician, and then everyone discouraged me from that. It turns out, Paul, if you get a PhD in mathematics, you can make an S ton of money. But nobody around me knew that.
Yeah.
So they pushed me into being a doctor.
When you say who pushed you out of that, are we talking parents or are we talking friends?
All of my family.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They see, what are you going to do with a math degree?
Well, apparently they're not very educated about it.
They said, well, you should be a doctor. So I looked into that and I didn't like it. And so then I was like, well, I kind of like working in baseball.
Were you working in baseball at the time?
Nope.
No.
It just looked...
But you were watching your brother play ball.
I watched my brother play ball, and I knew I played golf. And so I knew that, you know, there was a turf profession to some degree or another. And then I ended up talking with some guy on a minor league field. And I was like, oh, I can do that from college? And then I looked it up at school, and I was like, oh, I can. So I signed up.
So that was your aha moment, is
yeah.
what you'd say, where you said, I could do this.
It was probably not the most well thought out decision, but
well,
I took my first class and fell in love. I just absolutely loved the course material.
See, I came at it a different way. I grew up a big Cubs fan growing up here in southern Wisconsin. At the time, the Brewers weren't around.
Mm-hmm.
So the Cubs were the only thing you had.
Wow,
so
you're old.
A big Cubs fan.
I'm just kidding.
And I know. And then when the Brewers came around, I didn't really care much for the Brewers because by that time I was too deeply entrenched into the Cubs.
Yeah.
And I remember my father taking me down to Wrigley Field when I was like 10 or 12 years old, first time. And I remember plain as day walking into the vomitory, up into the seating bowl of the ballpark. And the first thing you see, of course, back then, every game was a day game in Wrigley. And the sun was shining and the ivy was waving in the wind. And I thought, oh, I would love to take care of a place like this. You know, 'cause I mowed lawns around the neighborhood and stuff. So I thought, wow, that'd be cool to take care of this. And you know, in subsequent years, as I got old enough to drive, my friends and I would go down 3-4 times a year during the summer when school was out to see Cubs games. And typically they were doubleheaders back then. They still did scheduled doubleheaders in the 70s, mid to late 70s. And, you know, my friends would be down there taking pictures of the players, and I'd be down there taking pictures of the ground crew doing their jobs. Now, at the time, I didn't jump into, didn't think at that point that that's what I was going to be, because I also had a big interest in meteorology. So when I went to school and got into college, I entered as a meteorology major. But math did me in.
Oh.
I was really good at math till I hit calculus. Once I hit calculus, it was like hitting a brick wall and I couldn't get past it.
You got to have math to do meteorology. It's like physics.
Oh, no kidding. Meteorology is all math.
Yeah.
And so finally, after a couple different tries of getting past calculus, I took a year off. And
if
I was
I'd been your tutor, I'd have gotten you through it.
I'm sure you would have. I was working a groundskeeping job. And at one point, my mom, who at the time was doing typing. This is in the days before computers, kids. My mom was doing typing of dissertations for students in the ag school in the meat and animal science department.
She
was typing
God,
and editing dissertations.
Yeah.
And the students would come to home. So she came up to me one day and she says, "Why don't you go down to the ag school and see if they've got a program for groundskeeping?" And I go, "Mom, they don't have classes to teach you how to cut grass. Come on."
Oh, that's hilarious.
She goes, "No, just go ahead. Just go down there and check, because I'm sure they probably got something." Well, sure enough, they had a turf program, and Dr. Jim Love. Oh, I used to love that name. Dr. Love was
especially in the 70s.
Was the person who started it back in the early 60s, and he was still the one running the program, and he wasn't a great mentor. He knew when to kick me in the ass when I needed to, and I owe a lot of my success to him, because there were times when I wanted to get out of something really easy, and he would say, "No, you're going to take that class and you're going to flunk it. And you'll be that much smarter when you take it the second time." But he also said to me, he goes, "You know, I'm not asking you to get an A." He says, "All I'm asking you to do is pass, because it's not the grades that are going to get you to the job. It's the experience."
Yeah.
And those words ring true to me today. But that was how I got into the industry. You know, and back then, keep in mind, there was very few people in sports turf. They were all in golf.
Yeah.
So I was a rarity back then for wanting to do sports turf, because it was in the infancy at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So that's where I ended up. Now, how did you choose the college that you wanted to go to? Just the one that was closest to you, or?
Yeah, I started at an all women's college in North Carolina. And then switched over to Virginia Tech because it was nearby, in-state tuition. And, yep. I, you know, like I said, I was looking at pre-med and, took a physics class actually. And everyone's like, "Why are you taking physics in pre-med?" I was like, "Well, 'cause I like it." and I didn't like the pre-med students, and I knew that I was actively seeking out being not pre-med. And, but I needed to find something at the school. But Virginia Tech at the time, had a, and I don't know if it still does or not, but it had a pretty active pre-med program, because it is a very strong science and tech school. It didn't have a med school, but, you know, it was really good at preparing students for that. So that's how I ended up there. You know, I didn't want to go to a med school yet because, again, in the back of my mind, I knew I wasn't going into medicine, although I wasn't going to admit that to anybody yet. But mm-hmm. So that's how I ended up at Tech. I had some fun professors who, you know, it was kind of not intentionally the opposite of what you had, but where I would say, "Hey, I'm going to take soil physics instead of taking just standard soil survey." Mm-hmm. Because on a golf course, soil survey makes sense. You've got a lot of different soil types that you'll be working with over your entire acreage, your 200 acres. On a baseball field, that was silly. even if you're on native soil, you kind of got the same one throughout the whole thing for the most
part.
And what I really needed, what I could tell I needed, was the physics and the physical properties of the soil, which would be scary to most people because it's so heavy in math. But to me, I was like, oh, thank God, something I understand. And so I took things like soil physics and cell molecular biology and loved my turf pathology. I studied under Dr. Houston Couch for pathology, and I looked at going into turf path, but it was a little too nitpicky for me. A little too much on the itty bitty tiny little things. I get lost in the minutia instead of paying attention to the big picture.
The grand scheme, right.
Yeah. excuse me.
So,
but, yeah.
Were there people in the industry that offered help and guidance to you along the way, or who were
big? This really cool guy out of Baltimore, Maryland.
Who's that?
What was that? I don't know. He was a really interesting looking character.
Some
nice guy. Some dirt slinger. Yeah. Actually, no, it was funny because I wouldn't have met you, Paul, if it hadn't been for the man who is now my stepfather.
Right.
But who at the time was just a family friend. And that sounds. But Kip Connolly, the owner of Landscape Supply Incorporated out of Roanoke, Virginia, and Richmond, Virginia. He puts on a show every year, and he gets in guys from the local area to come in and talk to everybody from the region and give a nice big turf talk, because that's what all of his customers do. And so he had you in, and he, you know, set me up to talk to you and get to know you a little bit better. And so actually, you know, at the time, I wasn't real sure how I was going to get into this whole turf thing. And some of the things you said to me led me, ironically and funnily enough, to Mike Bookholder down in Durham.
Right.
And so I ended up working with him for my first job, and then getting to know you better and you know, getting mentored by the two of you. And I think it's that mentorship that really goes a long way for a turf student, especially a sports turf student. And I think that's a lot of what we have to look at. You know, even now, I know I'm not technically in sports turf, you know, as far as being a dirt slinger anymore.
Yeah, turf manager, right?
Yeah. But I still look for opportunities to mentor, you know, younger kids where I can, even if it's just for 10 minutes. Well, you know, we've got a young kid who's a couple houses away from us. And Larry and I went over the other night and sat down with him and his parents and talked to him about how turf works.
Yeah. And anytime I can find somebody who's got an interest in it, I am, you know, all over them, because I'm, you know, you try and help expand the pool of good turf people out there. And if you see that they've got potential, you certainly want to try and push them in there. And I've used that. I've used our Little League to do that. I've gotten kids in there and kids who have gone on. One of them, actually, Andy McNitt, might talk about him when we talk on the show today. One of his favorite students that I sent his way from our Little League, a kid that I saw, he used to play ball, and you know, he was really good when he worked on my crew. He was he paid very good attention to the details, and you could just tell that this kid. And I stopped one day and said, "Have you ever thought of going into, you know, into turf management?" At the time, I forget what it was. He was majoring in down at Beloit College. He was playing baseball for Beloit College, and he was, you know, it was some geology thing, if I recall correctly. And eventually he decided, after he said, "I have to finish this first, because I got to show my parents that, you know, I finished what I start." So he finished that degree, and then he went on to Penn State and graduated from there. And now he's doing a really good job. And,
oh, cool.
You know, that's great. And of course, I've got my son going through the program now. And I've got another new student that starting this year, a young female, which I love getting the females into the industry, as you well know, Teresa. So that's any chance I can get to bring somebody into the industry and give them the experience that I can through my ways of doing it at the Little League field is great. And from there, turn them loose and let them go. I wish I had had that. I mean, I had Dr. Love. Mm-hmm. And I had Harry Gill for a couple of weeks when I did my internship, and that was really it. And, you know, my son's got it easy compared to what I had to do, because I had to start from nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's one of the keys to help getting more people into this profession is we've got to have our professionals be looking out for kids who are interested in this thing and pushing them that way if they've got that interest. Let them know, hey, this is a job that you can have, and you know, it's kind of fun.
We probably shouldn't call them kids either. But I catch myself doing that all the time, Paul. It's the first sign of getting old.
That's what happens when we get old, yes. But I think it's important for us in the industry to be able to recognize a kid that might have an interest and help him find that way and let him know that, yeah, this is a job you can have. And by the way, it's kind of fun and it keeps you young, in my opinion.
It does. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're going to find out more about that. We're going to talk right after the break here. We'll talk to some university what would you call them? Rock stars?
Sports turf rock stars. Yeah.
And let's find out what's going on in the sports turf education industry. Innovation. That's what we're all about at Beacon. We spend each summer out on fields working with field maintenance equipment, and from that come ideas. Our engineer takes those ideas, develops them, perfects them, and then we test them. Not just once, but daily at our field maintenance research facility. We work out as many bugs as we can while we evaluate the product. Once perfected and the desired performance is achieved, we give it our Beacon-built stamp. That's how we've developed such revolutionary products as the Streamliner Chalker, the Sweet Spot Tamp System, the Phantom Batting Cage, the Beacon Field Weights and Tarp Cart, the Adjustable Weight Nail Drag, and the list goes on and on. We live and breathe sports field management. We walk the walk, and we talk the talk. Don't you think it's time to give Beacon a look? To request a catalog, give us a call at 800-747-5985 or make a request from our website at www.beaconathletics.com. where our web store is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long.
Hi, this is Evan from the AAA Gwinnett Braves, and you're listening to the Diamond Da Vinci's podcast.
Our Out of the Park interview today is actually split in two. We'll hear from two different turf programs to get a feel for what is happening with regards to recruiting new students into their respective programs and their view on the health of the turf grass education industry. Now, our first guest currently resides at the University of Tennessee, but he received his PhD from Michigan State University. So we want to welcome back John Sorokin to the show. John, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I've been talking to people at Estimate this past fall, or when it was January, actually, about the turf program around the country, because I'm hearing lots of things that make me a little unsettled. It seems like they're having problems pulling students into the program. So if you don't mind, what is the current state of your turf management program with respect to student numbers?
We kind of saw that similar trend over the last, I would say, since maybe 2005, 2006, maybe 2007, a decline in numbers to a point where we got critically low, down to about 12 undergraduate students in our program. And right now, what we did was we hired a person to help us with marketing and communications, and we invested and hired a marketing company to help us come up with ways to do things to increase visibility and increase enrollment. And last year, we really launched our, or 2 years ago, we launched our, started launching our campaign. And we really pushed it a year ago from now. And we got 28 new students in our program last year. We're upwards in the mid 40s now. So we're one of the few programs that's actually grown a lot while everyone's declined. So good times at Tennessee right now.
Well, let me ask you, in your opinion, what do you believe was the cause of the drop-off that we're seeing, not just at your university, but around the country?
Yeah, well, when you look at things like Kentucky, they have no turf students, I don't think, anymore. And Wisconsin's down to
three
or four students.
Yeah.
Three students, and they've got
three
scholarships to give away, and they can't give them away. Right?
I was shocked.
Wow.
Yeah. I think the decline was with several things. One, obviously the golf programs drive most things. And if you look at the economy turned in mid-2000s, And, mm-hmm. you know, we started having golf courses closing down. So more courses were closing than they were being built. The building kind of tanked. So there was that. So the economy didn't help. I think the other thing is, you know, where do we get our students from? You know, if you look at a lot of superintendents or sports field managers, they work on golf courses or athletic fields, maybe when they're in high school. Mm-hmm. And they could have gone to college and said, man, I don't like what I'm studying. I want to do turf. I like working on the golf course. Or they just got into turf because they worked on it in high school. And you don't have those kids as much as you used to. It's more Hispanic labor, things like that. So you don't mm-hmm. have the initial exposure to the industry. I think superintendents didn't help. And I think when students or young kids talk to superintendents, they would say, you don't want to do this for a career. You work 80 hours a week. You get yelled at all the time. And you work weekends. You know, that the perception was actually quite negative a lot of times. Mm. I heard that from multiple students, including sports field managers. You know, it's really sad when we lose someone like Fosbender at LSU because, you know, just the hours he put in working at a university and all the sports programs, you know, he felt he wasn't getting to spend enough time with his family.
Sure. And that's a common theme throughout all of sports field management right now.
Yes, it is. And I think that, and then the other is, you know, one of the things I don't like, especially on the sports turf side, is the pay. Mm-hmm. I don't think that you graduate and you're not getting paid much more than you were back in the late 80s, early 90s to start.
Yeah.
So I don't think we've done a good enough job as whether we're, however we are in the turf grass industry and sports turf industry, promoting the professionalism and justifying why we should be getting paid more.
Yeah.
Or the people that are looking after these fields should be getting paid more.
Do you think that's because, you know, we've got high profile jobs and people are just thinking, oh, it'd be great to work for, let's say, the NFL or the MLS, and they don't pay attention to their payment package? Or
that's certainly what ownership is doing. I can tell you that.
Well, I mean, that's exactly business. You know, that's exactly what they want to do.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't.
They got to save money somewhere, right? It's a business for them.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's, and I think from the professional level all the way down to these, you know, single A, double A, triple A baseball levels, they don't, you know, they're not making a lot of money.
No.
If you're in sports turf, and I have students that want to do sports stuff, I see the best route for them to go to is try to get jobs at universities and colleges,
yeah.
or even for cities, parks and recs that actually probably pay a little bit better.
Or at least have a nice package.
And give you a better benefit package and things like
yes.
that. So,
yeah.
Yes, I agree. And I'm going through that now. My son's just finishing up. He'll be done at the end of this year. Mm-hmm. Not school year, but at the end of the year in December, doing the Penn State World Campus Turf Program
yeah.
to get his degree. And he's trying to decide, does he want to go into Major League Baseball? And he's had a taste of it, and, you know, he kind of soured it at first, but it seems like he's got some interest in it again. And, you know, I keep telling him, you know, there's a lot of different places that you can go and work, and some mm-hmm. that might even be better than that. But, you know, there's always the lure of working for, you know, a big team. So
yeah. There is, definitely. And, you know, those are great experiences to get, especially as an internship, because it helps build, at least build your resume to get your foot in the door for more competitive jobs.
Yeah.
Right, right.
For sure. But, yeah.
Oh, so the recruiting initiatives that you really worked on was simply just learning where to get the word out more to, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and one of the things, I mean, you said I got my PhD at Michigan State. I got 4 degrees. I went through the 2-year, 4-year master's
Show
and
off.
PhD at Michigan State. Well, I don't know. My blood is very green right now, so it's a good time for Michigan State.
Yeah, you're right.
Right?
Exactly.
But Trey Rogers always said the key to life is recognition, one of the things he said. And, you know, I've taken that to heart, and we've looked at how do we get increase the visibility, the recognition of our program. And, you know, our students are our best things. If you look at the history of the turf grass programs around the country, you always hear of the best ones historically have always been Michigan State and Penn State. Mm-hmm. There's also been, you know, Mississippi State in the South and maybe NC State. But those are the programs that have always had a lot of students, like consistently.
Yeah, it's definitely been Penn and Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you go around, I go to California, I go all over the country, and I always run into a Michigan State or a Penn State alum, whether it's a sports turf or a golf course manager.
Yeah.
And, you know, those people bring the visibility back to that program. So my belief is it starts with your students bringing that recognition back to your program. So having good student numbers, you know, in the long term will help keep your sustain your program and maybe even grow it. So that's one of the things we've tried to focus on, is getting our student undergraduate student numbers up and, you know, increasing their visibility, getting them at good internships, adjusting our program so that, you know, they can be more competitive with other university graduates.
Sure.
And things like that. And well, recruiting them has been our big focus, is trying to recruit these students.
Well, and it seems like there's a ton of internships available. If you look at the board at STMA conference, I think there's more internships available than there are students these days.
Hmm. There are, and there's more jobs available than there are students right now too, graduating.
Yeah. Well, and that's
on both the sports surf and golf side.
Yeah, on the golf side, I'm on the Wisconsin Turfgrass Association's board here. And I was talking to some golf course superintendents at one of our recent meetings, and they're telling how they're really struggling finding candidates for job openings in the golf end, which that's pretty telling right there.
And that might be a good thing. That might help drive our salaries a little bit better.
I think we got to take advantage right now. That's a great point, Teresa. I think right now is the time for us to strike with stuff like that, because I know of a half dozen first assistants jobs open just in the Knoxville, Chattanooga, East Tennessee area, and they can't find people to fill those jobs. And I got an email yesterday from a former student, and he's like, we're looking for an AIT. I'm like, good luck. You know, because these students graduating now if you think 10 years ago or 5 years ago, they were lucky to get an AIT job or something like that, or a second assistant job. They're really lucky to get. Yeah. They're usually going in for ATEC or AIT.
Mm-hmm.
Now these students are graduating and they're getting second assistant, even first assistant jobs, maybe when they're not quite ready, but when they have definitely a lot less experience than students, the same experience as students 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That is the upside, is that, you know, somebody coming out of turf school right now, because of the lack of graduates and the availability of a lot of jobs, you know, they might not have to go to the bottom of the bottom rung of the ladder anymore. They can be a step or two up.
Yeah,
exactly.
They can stay closer to home. So they've got a little bit more flexibility
in this situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess you could say that. Yeah. Yeah. So I would guess that kind of answers my next question is what is the turf industry job outlook for these students who are both coming into this program and who are just leaving the program?
Well, you know, that's been one of our biggest recruiting tools that we've used to recruit new students. Even when the economy was down back in,
2008, 9,
5, 10 years ago, still had 100% job placement. We had 100% job placement for students that, wanted to work and, were willing to move a little bit.
That's great.
They weren't as good of jobs as they are now. They were, like I said, the AIT jobs or something like that. But now they're getting really good jobs graduating. Last spring, we graduated, I think it was 7 students, and every single one of them had a job offer before they had graduated. Some of them had as many as 5. Yeah. 5 job offers. So this is,
If you can't play 7 students, you're in trouble. I guess.
Yeah. So, but just the number of jobs that they had offered was phenomenal. So
that's
probably going to hopefully drive up the
recruiting
for these people that want to get into it. But I think it's also our job, every single one, from academicians to superintendents, to increase the visibility and why it's important for our the people that look after these sports fields to get paid more, especially the city parks and rec fields, K-12, universities, because these are the ones that have children playing on them. And, the importance of keeping kids safe is vital. They count how many times a kid should throw a pitch, so why don't they put an effort into making sure that field that they're playing on is also safe?
Right. Yeah, an injury at that age is an injury that stays with you. You know, if you right. if you get a really, really bad injury, I mean, it's going to follow you around for the rest of your, yeah. you know, your athletic career. And actually, even if you're not an athlete, you know, you can still be bothered by it when you get mm-hmm. older. Yeah,
exactly. So I've got two bad knees from playing sports, and, you know, it restricts what I can do running wise now. So,
yeah.
You know, you want to be safe as long as possible. And that's why it's important to hire someone that's educated to look after these fields and pay them what they deserve.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there have been a lot of smaller turf schools mm-hmm. than the Penn States of the world, the Michigan States, the Tennessees, that have pretty much evaporated in the past 10 years of the bad economy and everything else. Mm-hmm. Are we at the end of that, do you hope?
I hope so.
And is there any chance of getting any of those back?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. You got to talk to some of the administrations. But, you know, you got from Lake City in Florida, that was one that shocked me as they shut that one down. That was a factory for putting out, at least especially on the superintendent side. But, you know, I'm more concerned about programs like University of Illinois, University of Wisconsin, Washington State University has already said they're not going to fill any turf positions there, unless it's with the seed breeding or something like that, but it's not for teaching and all that. They said that if our students in Washington State want to study turf, they can go to Oregon State.
Wow.
So, you know, you've got things that the universities, places like University of Illinois, they're such a research-driven university, and at the basic level, not the applied turf level like right. we do, is fundamentals, that they don't see a value in that. Mm. And so you see their numbers struggling because of that. And I guess I wonder how many turf programs do we need around the country, and especially if they're ones that aren't really preparing the students.
Good point.
Yeah. If they don't have the support. I think we're really fortunate at Tennessee to have, you know, when I got here almost, it'll be 14 years in May. Holy smokes, I'm old. it was just me that was doing the teaching program.
Yeah.
And wow. that was tough. And I had one colleague, Tom Samples, who's still here, fortunately, and he's 100% extension. And I only had a 25% teaching appointment. So today, we, you know, the support of our administration, we were able to hire a turf weeds position, which is now with Dr. Brosnan, who doesn't teach, but he works with a lot of students, hires a lot of students. And then Dr. Horvath's position, Brandon Horvath's position, which is a predominantly teaching program.
That's great.
Appointment. He's 75% teaching. So we were able to expand what we had to offer the students. And then we got super lucky in that we got an assistant dean who's associate dean now, that we stole from Wisconsin, Dr. John Steyer.
Yep.
And, you know, he's teaching class, a turf class. And he's involved, obviously, and it's very supportive of our program. And I think we're preparing students coming out of Tennessee that are ready to start those higher-end jobs when they're going, because we make sure they get good internships, multiple internships, long ones. Right now, I'm done teaching for the semester. I finished 2 weeks ago now, so our students can go get more competitive internships.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You know, that's neat.
When they call Dave Meller at the Red Sox and say, I call Dave and said, hey, are you looking for any interns? He goes, yeah, I take 4 students, but I've got 45 applicants or 30 applicants or 20 applicants. I'm like, so just have them send a resume in. And I could say, well, our students, the student I have can be there March 1st.
That's awesome.
Or everyone else can get there May 1st. So our student can get there a month before opening day instead of a month after.
That's right. Pretty smart, John.
It's helped them get better interns, but also get that 2 months more experience, which has been phenomenal for the students in getting that practical training.
Well, Dr. Love, who was my advisor way back when in the turf program, back when dirt was just becoming a thing, you know, he always preached to me that, you know, grades are not going to get you the job in this industry. It's your experience. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as you became a student of Dr. Love's at the University of Wisconsin, he got you an internship right away with one of his former students who was out, you know, typically it was golf course work back then. But, you know, so that's where I got all my learnings from was golf course work. I did a short couple-week internship at the Brewers at the very end of my schooling, but most of my work was on golf course work, and that's that experience is valuable. And it, like my son's been working 7 years under me at the Little League complex, and you know that and right. that's huge. So
that foundation you set a long time ago to carve what you can do and advance your career. That's perfect. Exactly what we want our students to do too.
Yeah, you have to have the combination of both the book end of it and the practical end of it to really be able mm-hmm. to jump out there. So any final words on the future of your program or the future of the turf industry? What is it going to take to help these things grow again? Besides what you folks are doing, what can we do as sports turf managers to help that to help those programs grow back to what they used to be?
I think it's saying that I think we got to look out there and say that this is a successful career for people to get into. It's an important, you know, everyone cares about their kids, and why wouldn't you want someone that's there to look after these fields from Little League baseball to all levels, soccer fields to college parks and recs, whatever. I think we just got to keep tooting our own horn is what we need to do, I guess. The squeaky wheel disagrees if we want to say that or whatever. We need to, from the professional, all the way from STMA to, you know, me as a professor at a university, I always have to talk about how important and how valuable the people are. And then just marketing again. I think another one is getting to the parents, reaching out mm-hmm. to the parents. A lot of times when they come in and student wants to come into turf and it's like, what, you want to get a 3-ton pickup truck and a lawnmower and be a turf professional?
So we
try to put a lot in, and I put a lot of emphasis to talking to parents when kids come in at high school or things like that, to getting with the teachers and guidance counselors. This year we're bringing in 4 schools on 4 different days from Knoxville area, high school kids to teach them STEM, science, sports, turf, and golf at our research.
Cool.
Very neat.
And
that's awesome.
We started doing that with 1 school, and we got 1 student out of it. Now we've got 4 coming in, and I'm hoping we're going to get 8 students out of it potentially, because they really love and don't realize it. What you're doing is actually science, technology, engineering, and math.
Well, yep. and that's the big thing is that when you talk to most people, they go, oh, I never even knew you could pick that as a profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing, I think if programs start growing again, we got to focus on not just teaching turf, but one of the other things is we try to get them other skills of professionalism and communication. We work on them, get their public speaking so that they can be, you know, the champions for our industry when they get out there and say, this is why I do what I do, and this is why it's important.
Right.
And all the way to even getting business minors and things like that, so they can, you know, they can come across as when they're doing their budgets, and they can justify, this is why it's better to lease this equipment versus purchase this one, but we want to purchase this piece of equipment versus lease it because we just use it so much and we abuse it that it's, you know, mm-hmm. we get our monies out of it, or, you know, little things like that.
Yeah,
we're
graduating the consummate professional for the turfgrass industry.
Well, and their bosses are businessmen. It helps if they can speak their language.
Exactly.
Yep. Great.
Well, John, thank you very much for your input. You know, this has been something that has really concerned me over the past several years, seeing these turf schools fade away or fade to nearly nothing, and I'm hoping that everybody can do their part to help rebuild the teaching, because without that, our future is not good.
I couldn't agree more. We need to, definitely.
All right. Thank you very much, John, for coming on the show today.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Rain. For a sports turf manager, it can be a godsend as it provides the needed water crucial to the life of your turf grass. But during baseball and softball seasons, it can be the thorn in your side on game days. Let Beacon relieve the pain of rainy game days with a full line of wet weather management tools to keep you in the game. Cover it up with Beacon's Field Shield 8-ounce tarps, available in all sizes from full infield to small area tarps. Anchor it down with Beacon's Field Weights and do away with those bulky, messy sandbags. Or use our new Pro Tarp Pins, so bright you won't lose these in your turf. Haul it off by using the Beacon Tarp Cart for moving and storing your mound and plate tarps off the field. Water on the field? Suck it up using Beacon's reusable puddle sponges, puddle pumps, or Diamond Pro Calcine Clay drying agents to get your games up and running again. Take the pain out of the rain and let Beacon help you. Call Beacon at 800-747-5985 to talk to our experienced staff, or check us out on the web at www.beaconathletics.com, where we're open 24/7 and ready to take your order.
Hi, this is Jake Hannes with the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers in Appleton, Wisconsin. You're listening to the Diamond Da Vinci Podcast.
All right, our second interview on the subject is going to look further to the east for the answers from another great turf swami. So we head to the campus of Penn State to get the lowdown on the health of their turf program and the turf education industry. So let's give a warm Da Vinci's welcome to Dr. Andy McNitt. Andy, how are you today?
Hey, thanks for having me, Paul. Teresa, it's good to be here.
So we talked to John Sorokin a little earlier from the University of Tennessee to get an idea of what the status is on their turf program right now. Why don't you give me an update on the status of the Penn State turf program? How many students you got? What are the trends you're seeing with your students?
Right.
What's your program about?
Well, certainly I think all turf programs peaked in and around, you know, the early 2000s. At that time, we were graduating over 50 bachelor's of science degrees in turf grass science from Penn State.
Wow.
All programs have dropped, and ours have dropped too. Currently, we're graduating in the low 30s, 32, 34. So if I can do my math right, you know, that's somewhere around 130-plus students we have in our BS program currently.
That's great.
We feel fortunate. I mean, and our approach has really been is that secondary education and college degrees are changing, and people's lives are much more complicated and busy. And we see a lot of people picking turf grass sort of as a second career. So we're trying to sort of offer an entire smorgasbord of ways that you can get a turf grass certificate, degree, et cetera. So not only do we offer the BS program, which everybody talks about, and I think in 2001 there was a survey done and there was somewhere around 34 programs in the United States offering a turf grass degree. I have not seen more recent data than that. My guess is the number's down slightly as we see, you know, several programs of either combined with horticulture or drop the program altogether in some small schools.
Yeah.
But we can get back to that later. But then we also have our two-year certificate degree, which is a resident degree. The students come here for 2 years. We are graduating almost 20, about 18 per year currently out of that program. And then, of course, our online program, which has been successful beyond my expectation. And you'll have to give me a minute to make sure I know these numbers, but in our online BS, we probably have around 38, 39 students. We have an online two-year program that probably has 50 plus, and then we have two certificate programs, a basic certificate and an advanced certificate. And the basic certificate does not offer you enough class time to, for instance, become a certified sports field manager or a certified golf course superintendent, but the advanced certificate does. And we probably have somewhere around 50 to 60 to 70. The numbers fluctuate wildly at any one moment in each of those programs. And then we have an online Master's of Professional Studies, which is a non-thesis master's program. And we currently have about 32 students enrolled in that. So
Oh, cool.
The idea is, you can jump in and out. You know, maybe you go to a community college for a year, and then you come to campus for 2 years, and you get a job offer, and you leave and you finish online. Or, you know, you can kind of pick and choose. Maybe you get the resident certificate program, and then you're going to take that and roll those credits into a 4-year degree by taking online classes part-time while you work. And I mean, the Fowler boy who's working in Kansas City for the Royals got that job offer in his after his sophomore year, left and is finishing up online, and he's about to get his BS. So he was here for 2 years and is finishing his degree while he's working for the Royals. So that's kind of our philosophy, is that while the brick and mortar method is certainly still in play, we see education diversifying in a whole bunch of directions at once, and we're doing our best to meet those needs.
Sure. And my, as you well know, of course, because I think he's got your class this semester, you know, my son is also at on your online program. And for him, it was a matter of economics. It was he could go to school and work full time at the same time. And, you know, when he first talked about this, I was a little leery because, you know, you got to be dedicated to get onto that computer every night and be getting your work done. And I wasn't sure if he could do it. But I'll tell you, you know, he's been able to do that pretty well and do well in most of his classes. You know, the part that I really wasn't sure how would be pulled off would be, you know, how do you get the practical part of some of the teachings on an online program? But from what I've seen so far, it's been pretty amazing how that works.
Well, we do our best. I mean, and I will tell you that there are certainly positives to taking classes online, and there are some negatives. And so one of the negatives that we worry about is whether or not this sense of community and networking will be as strong. And we find, and we're trying to figure out ways to encourage that, even having some programs where maybe you'll take most of the class online, but you'll come here for 2 weeks and experience campus and meet people and see the research farm, et cetera. But again, you know, while we like to think of turf grass management as a hands-on major, and it is to some degree, our philosophy here at Penn State is that, you know, we're trying to train you to be the head superintendent, the head groundskeeper that has to deal with budgets, et cetera. And we believe that, you know, do you really need to pay tuition to learn to engage a PTO? You know, maybe you should get paid to do that. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that our internship program is really strong, that our on-campus opportunities, I mean, we're blessed. We have two golf courses. We have 30-some athletic fields. The golf courses and the athletic fields each hire up to 30 students a semester to work part-time. The reason they hire 30 is so that at any one time, six are available because they have to work around classes and so forth. But there's, and our research farm is within walking distance to the campus as well.
Oh, that's
great.
We hire about
eight students to work there. So my idea is that, sure, the hands-on portion is important, but that's sort of, you know, I don't want to create the best entry level worker. We're trying to train them for something greater. And I believe that those skills should be taught, should be learned. But why not get paid, you know, slightly over minimum wage to work at our local golf course and learn those skills? And so we're always in touch with Rick Pageant, our golf course superintendent, and Herb Combs, who runs the Beaver Stadium grounds crew, and talking to them about how they, you know, can be partners with us in training the students. So, I mean, that's kind of our philosophy.
In your estimation, Andy, how many of your turf students are currently enrolled? How many came there at the very beginning? I'm looking at the four-year, you know, the standard BS program. Mm-hmm. How many of those students came right in as a freshman in the turf program versus how many are coming, transferring in from a local tech school to get their basic schooling and then jumping in to get the finishing portion from you folks?
Yeah, let me see if I understand your question right. You're not asking about people who've changed majors. You're asking about where they begin and where they end.
They're doing it to save money in a lot of cases,
Right. And so what's interesting about Penn State that's different from a lot of other universities is we have sort of our own community college system, which we call satellite campuses. And I don't know the number right now because it changes, but I think we have like 22 satellite campuses throughout the state. And so they act as community colleges. So to tell you the truth, the majority of our students who are BS students resident here on campus, I would say 90% are all Penn State. However, probably 80% of those started at a satellite campus.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they sort of get their initial year or two locally at a local campus that they might commute to, and then they come to Penn State for their last 2 years. Now, because we have so many that start somewhere else, our Berks campus, which is near Reading, Pennsylvania, we have Mike Fidanza, Dr. Mike Fidanza, who is a professor of turfgrass science there. And so we encourage anyone who's going to a satellite campus to go to Berks if they can, because they can get their introductory soils, they can get their introductory turf, et cetera, taken care of before they come on campus. And then their curriculum plan is pretty streamlined once they get here.
Yeah, I had talked to Dr. Soldat from the University of Wisconsin back a couple of years ago, and he had told me that he has very few students anymore that come in to Madison right off the bat as a freshman in the turf program and are there for all 4 years. He said most of his students were transfers into the program where they go to a community college first, and then they transfer in for the last 2 years to get their main, you know, turf classes and things
right.
like
and
that.
We see a lot of that. We certainly see a lot of that with the online. We see less of it with the bachelor's program, I think, because these satellite campuses exist and the tuition is slightly less to go there, and there's not the housing cost, et cetera. So they're Penn State all the way, but really oftentimes we only see them for two, more often 3 years here on campus, but that first year they're somewhere else.
Well, and the other thing that I know you had told me, I think while we were at the STMA, or I guess it was an STMA event up in Green Bay last fall, was that your online program, that you really don't have students who come in there and say, okay, I'm going to take this, but I'm going to do it all online. That in most cases, it's somebody who already has a job in turf who's coming to your online course to help.
That's correct, and I think that's a great point.
More enriched.
Because of the hands-on part is, you know, when you're doing it online, it's hard to share. I mean, we have really good educational designers who help us kind of rethink what you want them to know as far as the hands-on practical stuff, and we do our best. But my argument is exactly what you just said, is that the majority of people taking these online classes are not your 19-year-old freshman, you know, just out of high school with very little experience. Most of them are already working in the industry and trying to advance themselves. And they'll come in with community college credits, or they were a major in engineering at one time and dropped out, got a job on the golf course, and now want to finish their degree. And so they bring in a lot of transfer credits with them. So that's true.
The beauty of the online course, of course, is that at least like for my son, he's living in Wisconsin and he's doing the online program, but he's paying in-state tuition. So it's a way of keeping your tuition down.
Correct. So the World Campus means that wherever you are a resident student if you're taking classes on what we call the World Campus. So it also keeps costs down.
Oh, that's
great. And
costs
are a big concern. At Penn State, we're working very hard to make sure that all of our students finish in 4 years, because the biggest expense is if you have to go a fifth year. You know, that's way bigger than a 5 or 10% change in tuition. So we work very hard to get them through in 4 years max.
Do you see further growth in the online end of education in the turf education industry?
I think if you look at education across the board, you're going to see more and more of it. And Penn State, I think, was had a lot of foresight when in 1997 decided they were going to invest heavily in online learning. And so, you know, we jumped on. Dr. Turgeon led the way, and turf was, I think the very first course was introductory turf that Penn State offered online, and we were the second full program to be ready to go. I think nursing beat us to a full program, but we were the second full program. So really, I mean, when I first started designing courses for online, we were designing the courseware to be running on a 28.8 modem, if you can remember back that far.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so they were all worried about the size of graphics and that kind of thing. And of course, now, you know, we're incorporating lots of streaming video of the classroom and so forth, and trying to update that. But so we were very fortunate that Penn State had the foresight to jump on this online learning a long time ago.
So are there other kind of initiatives that you folks are working on to help attract new students to your turf program, Vandy?
We do. I mean, look, we're not doing anything special to that makes our numbers large. I mean, we're very, very fortunate in that we're an old program. We have lots and lots of alumni out there. And those alumni tend to send students to us, or at least they have. And this is, I think, one of the issues as to why we see student numbers in programs across the country being low. I mean, we're down 30-some percent as well. From, you know, a high of 55 probably to a low of, I think, 1 year we only graduated 28. But again, we're mostly graduating 32, 33-ish numbers. Is that once the economic collapse happened and Tiger Woods was no longer as popular as he used to be, you know, golf started to struggle. And so especially the guys that were struggling were superintendents, you know, in their early 50s who were probably making pretty good salary now because they've been at the course a long time or been in the business a long time, and clubs are looking at ways to downsize. So they say, hey, we can get rid of this guy and hire a young person at half the cost. So the old guys were bitter and still are to some degree. And so 85% of our incoming freshmen on their introductory interview, here's what I hear. I'm like, why did you pick turf grass science? Well, I got a job at the local golf course, which was across the street from where I lived, and I really liked it. And then I figured out I could make a career of this. And I'm like, why did you choose Penn State? I talked to my superintendent, and he said this is where I had to go. Right. So that's how they came in typically. But what's going on now is that kid goes and talks to the superintendent. The superintendent says, hey, kid, you don't want to get in this business. You know, it's not good, da da da. And he talks the kid out of it.
Yeah.
And I actually believe that's the major reason why we're seeing fewer students in turf programs. Entry-level jobs in both sports turf, but especially in golf, are numerous. I mean, I get guys saying, hey, we've advertised nationwide for an assistance position that pays decent, not great, but, you know, it wasn't bottom-of-the-barrel stuff. And they're like, we got two applicants that weren't worth anything.
Wow.
The GCSAA is actually this year for the first time, as far as I know, started to have an issue saying that, look, once this next generation, you know, the generation of 50-something, 60-year-old guys retire, we may not have enough manpower to backfill with qualified superintendents. Mm. I mean, your Marions and Oakmonts are always going to have, you know, qualified superintendents, but you move down to that mid-level and below, and they're beginning to worry that they're not going to backfill fast enough. So we actually project in 10 years there may be a shortage. Sports turf's a little different. It's the industry's younger. It's not quite as organized. So we find that students, there are fewer jobs. There are good jobs out there, and they're there. But you got to beat the bushes a little bit more.
But I think, Andy, what happened in golf is at this point in time is happening in sports turf. At least at the high end, and you know as well as I do, because you deal with a lot of the guys in the NFL. I talked to a lot of guys in MLB, where the stadiums are being stuffed with events outside of their normal sports, and these guys are getting squeezed tight to work more hours, little if any additional pay, and just less time off. And, you know, I talk to a lot of these guys, and they are getting burned out, and they are ready to blow. And these are going to be the guys who are going to say just what the golf course superintendent said 10, 15 years ago. You know what, kid, you don't want to get into this. It's not really worth it. Mm-hmm. I know I've had those conversations with my son. I said, you know, be careful what you wish for, because it's not the same Major League Baseball that I worked for back in the 90s.
And it is. And we're getting into a different topic that we could probably spend a whole show on.
Yeah.
But this idea that, you know, it's just marketing, 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 and they're just jamming more and more events in a shorter time frame. And, you know, my worry when I worry about safety and playability at NFL fields is that one of these days a sod truck's going to break down.
Oh, yeah.
Equipment's going to break down. There's going to be a weather event, and they're squeezed on time. And now they'll do everything they can to get that game to go off. But someday there's going to be half a field not sodded, and that field's the game's going to have to be forfeited.
Yeah,
it's coming. But yeah, you're right. They are getting squeezed, and it is happening in sports turf as well. The same thing happens in the NFL that you related to Major League Baseball, and it's not the marginal guys who are complaining. It's the top guys who I consider to be really, really good who are out there saying, oh, man, Andy, they're just squeezing me and it's tighter. And I tell them I need this much time for a turnaround. And they're saying you got half that amount of time. Throw more people at it. There has to be a limit.
Yeah, there's going to be mental breakdowns. And so, you know, the bottom line is from what I'm hearing from what you're saying is there's a lot of job openings out there. So there's that draw that, hey, when you graduate, there's more than likely a good job for you out there somewhere. The problem is getting these kids into the program and exposing them that, hey, this is a job that you can do. But the lack of kids, the lack of the number of kids coming out of school, hopefully should also help at some point in time the salaries to increase because the demand is there. Yeah,
I think we're already starting to see that just a little bit. We saw salaries drop for entry-level assistant golf course superintendents, and then they realized they couldn't get anybody. And so now you're seeing the salaries creeping back up. I wouldn't say across the board, and I wouldn't say giant amounts, but I've seen that turn around a little bit. But yeah, they're going to have to start offering a little bit more money, or you're just going to get unqualified, unskilled laborers who really can't pull off what some of these stadiums and other venues expect them to pull off. So
what in your eyes is the future of turf education and the future of our profession as well?
I think that overall it's going to be strong. I mean, you look at, you know, we've all heard of these waves of where there's massive teacher shortages. And then you go through another one where there's a glut of teachers available and they can't get jobs. And then you wait 15 years and it turns around again. I think we're looking at some of those cycles right now. I mean, it may never be as good as it was, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s. But I believe that the industry has bottomed out and we're seeing an upward tick. I think what we need to constantly be aware of and keep pushing is this idea of the sports turf manager as a professional. For some reason, the golf course superintendents have won that, and I think the sports turf managers are behind. We need to get that view in front of people who make decisions. I mean, look, in the NFL and Major League Baseball, people are stealing. They're attracting players. They're getting different coaches from other teams. Why isn't that happening as much with field managers? You know, they'll promote from within, or they'll take the guy who's taking care of the shrubbery and bring him in to take care of the field when he has, you know, very little experience there. As opposed to, and I think the reason is they don't view that person as a professional. And
or as important.
Or as important. And they don't see that, hey, you know, there's probably a kid who's really, really good at a different stadium who's an assistant who's ready to move up. And so I think we all need to work very hard at, I think we've come a long way in the 25 or plus years that I've been in this business. I guess it's over 30 now. I hate to give my age away. I think that we have to keep pushing for that professionalism day in and day out. And anything we can do to promote that, I think is going to promote the industry. Some programs are going to fail. You know, what you're seeing at some schools, and I don't want to name any, but that their student enrollment is so low that they're not collapsing the program, but they're probably not going to replace turf professors once they retire. They're going to change that into a different position.
Yeah.
But overall, I think there's still a lot of really good, healthy programs out there. And so I think that the education industry in turf grass is going to survive. I think it's going to do well. We may not see the kind of numbers ever again that we saw in the late 90s, early 2000s, but then a number of sports turf kids who are coming through our program has expanded greatly. You know, when I first became a professor, I was lucky to find one. Everybody was golf. And now, you know, some years it's 30% of our students are sports turf, maybe more.
Wow.
I mean, I think the average is probably 20 to 25. But just a couple of years ago, I would have told you that average was under 20. So the number of sports turf students or students coming through our program interested in sports turf is certainly increasing. So they're getting more visibility.
And you know, me being a sports turf, former sports turf student, and my son also being, you know, in that lane right now, and I hear him say every so often, God, everything I'm getting taught is being geared towards golf. He says, I never seem to see much sports turf stuff in here. I said, well, yeah, you got to apply it because they're the bigger fish in the pond. Does it ever get to the point to where some of these classes – or more of these classes are going to be geared more towards sports turf than golf, even though typically golf is a sports turf?
it is a sports turf, and we're aware of that, and we are changing. I mean, the other thing you have to realize is that, you know, when I look at the number of professors across the country who are working in golf and then the number of professors across the country working in sports turf, you know, there's not always that expertise sitting in the classroom. So probably what your son's experiencing online is true. You know, we do not have a large abundance of sports turf information there online, but certainly in our resident class, I've now devoted, 30% of my class time is going over sports turf. And I tell the golf guys, hey, you had the sports turf kids had to put up with learning about golf. You're now going to learn about sports turf. And so, but you're right. I mean, when I'm teaching you how to build a sand-based root zone, that's applicable for sports turf or golf.
Absolutely.
But many of the examples we use are golf examples. So we're conscious of that. And there's always a lag between what happens residently and what happens online for us. But I think that's coming.
Well, Andy, I appreciate your input. To me, it's an important topic because I want to see the health industry continue, and I want to see these opportunities for these young kids or young adults, as Teresa keeps pointing out to me, continue to expand. And I hope like heck that that we see a big growth. And certainly, you know, the economy rebounding hopefully will help that as well. So,
I wanted to add one last point, and that is Jeff Salmon, the new president of STMA. This is a big issue for him, and he's recently formed a subcommittee inside of STMA made up of turf grass professors to get together and talk about this issue and see what we can do. One of the main things I suggested was see if we can get better internships. You know, when you're looking at golf courses, they have dorms built on the golf course where you can stay. And I think we need to keep moving in that direction as sports person. But I want to hand it to Jeff Salmon for his leadership and STMA's leadership in realizing this is an important issue.
Absolutely. It is important to our future. And there's no doubt about it. And I agree. I appreciate him taking that up as something that's very important. Andy, thank you very much. And we hope to have you on again sometime soon on the show.
Well, good. Thanks, Paul, Teresa. It was really enjoyable. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, Paul, I thought those were two really good discussions. I don't want to say surprised. That's the wrong word. Pleased? I don't know. It was cool. There we go. It was cool to hear them both hit on some of the same reasons why they think we're having some trouble in the turf industry as far as attracting new students.
Yeah, you know, I would have thought we were going to get a lot of the same thing from both of them, but there was two completely different views, yet they had commonalities between them in lots of different ways. You know, the thing that I take out of this whole discussion is a couple points. One, obviously, if you're thinking about getting into the turf industry, there are a whole lot of jobs out there and not a lot of competition.
I don't think I realized that. I've got to go revisit my neighbor.
Yeah.
And let him know that maybe this is the time for him to strike this iron.
Yeah. And you know, I think Andy was right. There is an ebb and flow, just like, you know, teachers and nurses. I think we're seeing that here in the turf industry where we've hit a low spot after being high in the late 90s and early 2000s. We've kind of bottomed out, and now suddenly there's a lot of demand, and it's the word, it's getting that word out to these young adults that hey, there's a huge demand for this in the industry. You need to get going if you want to have the pick of the litter of jobs, and you know, we need these people. We can't be without them. Golf courses can't be without them, and more and more sports fields can't be without the professionals who've got the education to manage these. And you know, the other cool thing is that these schools are adapting to the needs of these people where they're having people getting jobs while they're in school and have to leave. So they've made a way so that these kids can finish up and finish their degree while they're working at that. I think it's just awesome. I mean, these kind of opportunities were not there when I started back in the late 70s and early 80s in the turf program at the University of Wisconsin. So, you know, there's nothing but promise ahead. It's just now the problem of getting the word out to these kids. And I, you know, I would push on all of our sports field managers that are listening to us. If you've got kids who are interested, we need to be pushing these kids into getting into these programs and learning as much as they can, because we need these kids beyond us.
Yeah.
Once we walk away from the industry, which I'm not too far away from.
Well, and one thing we've kind of glanced by here and there, and I hate to derail the topic, but I think it's important too. This might be a really good time for the sports turf managers to get together themselves and start talking about their own part of the industry. It's like we've been saying, the part of the industry is running away without the managers, and they're throwing more on their schedules. They're paying them less. They're expecting more out of them. You know, it's when you've got a glut of jobs and few people to take them that you can have a little bit more leverage on your side. And
absolutely.
So, you know, obviously you don't want to roar in like a bull in a china shop, but this is the time for us to start talking to each other and start coming up with some new plans for how, you know, they might want to approach their bosses in the future, how they might want to reconsider some of the ways that they're working with their management to gain a little bit more control over their own careers when possible. I say that with a big caveat, when possible. You know, we've got to put food on our tables.
And I can echo some of the words of some of my counterparts in Major League Baseball who, you know, the young people in the industry have to understand that, you know, if a job looks like it's not paying well enough, don't take it.
You'll burn out.
Not only will you burn out, but you're doing an injustice to the rest of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that you're getting paid fairly for what you're doing, and the way to do that is you don't take those jobs, even if it's a high end job.
Yeah.
If they're paying low, you got to walk away from that. You got to respect your own industry that you're going into, because in the long haul, it's only hurting you.
Right. Well, if you take that high end job and you take it for less money than you deserve, let's say, you know, 40 grand, which is way low. But just so I don't start stepping on anybody's toes here, take that high end job for 40 grand. Well, the next one that opens up, they know you got 40 grand, honey. What makes you think they're going to give you 80?
Yeah, these clubs talk. they talk amongst each other. They share the information. So they know when they get one of the other clubs gets a groundskeeper for, you know, 40,000 or whatever. They're going to find that out and say, hey, let's test the waters. Maybe we can get one for that too.
Absolutely.
And with the lack of candidates coming out of college now, now's the time to strike.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Great lesson for today and some great information for all these people.
Yep.
And as we say in school days, that about puts this show in the book.
Don't miss a minute of our next show. There are many places to find our podcast on the web. You can always go to our main page at beaconathletics.com/podcast. You can also get us on Apple or iTunes, which is probably how you got us in the first place. But we'd also ask you to go check out baseballtalkradio.com or baseballpodcast.net. There you'll find us along with some other really interesting baseball related podcasts for any team that you are interested in. We really like these guys. We've been partnered with them for a while now. I encourage you to go and take a peek at them.
Yeah, they just added a new show for Pirates fans, actually.
There's a Pirates fan?
There is somewhere in the world out there. Well, there's one doing the show, certainly.
Well, that's true. Oh, I'm so mean.
Great site for a lot of great baseball shows.
Absolutely.
We'd love to hear from you. You can email Teresa and I at podcast@beaconathletics.com, where you can send us your questions or comments on our show, good or bad. And if you have show ideas, send them along to us too. We'd love to hear from you.
And if by chance you're on Twitter, go ahead and follow us at Diamond Da Vincis. That's at Diamond, DAVINCIS. Not crazy active there, but you can always check in with us and see what's going on.
Diamond Da Vincis podcast is sponsored by Beacon Athletics for over 68 years, providing solutions for sports field managers. And with that, I'm out of here.
Adios.